Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, hello, hello. How are you all doing this evening? Yeah, I know. It's not Kalen. It's not the same without him doing his mini rogue accents. But hopefully he's going to be joining us here soon. But we have got a fantastic accent for you to listen to here in a little bit. But before we get that far, you know what time it is. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, as well as a vehicle to drive your goals like a Mack truck through ice cream, check us out at P4PMuscle.com. And now let's talk. Happy October, everyone. Can you believe it is October already? I still feel like I should be back in July somewhere. This year has just been speeding by. It is absolutely ridiculous. Before we'll know it, it's going to be Thanksgiving and then the holidays and then 2018. So all of those New Year goals, New Year's goals that you're putting off until January, do yourself a favor and get started today. Get started today. Why wait to be a better you in January when you can be a better you right now? You know, just something to consider. Just something to consider. So as many of you know, a couple weeks ago, Kalen and I were in Pennsylvania with Earl Snyder and Terry Weitzel, and we were at the NGA East Coast Classic and met a lot of fantastic people there. And one of them, you'll recall, was from England, and that was a Miss Julia Hubbard, and she was our pro masters figure champion for the show. And it just so happens that Julia was kind enough to jump on our show with us tonight. So, you know, we've kind of been doing our tour around the world, and even though I have to admit, England wasn't quite on the scope at the moment, but here we go. So we're going to have a little impromptu international stop. So we've been in Australia. Italy is coming up, but before we get there, we're going to get to England with Miss Julia Hubbard, and she has got a phenomenal story. Can't wait to dive into it. So let's go ahead and get started. Julia, please say hello to all of our listeners out there.
Hello, it's great to be on the show.
And we're super excited to have you. Why don't you go ahead and tell everyone just a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to dive into learning a lot more about you.
Okay, well, I've basically been an athlete all my life. My main sport used to be bobsled. So if you follow winter sports, the Winter Olympics, you'll know it's that crazy adrenaline-fueled sport. And I did that for about 4 years leading up to the Vancouver Olympics, but I didn't quite make it there. And then I got into Masters Athletics and bodybuilding after I retired from that.
All right.
Yeah, so I've been in performance sports all my life, basically, and I'm also a vegan athlete.
Yes, yes, and I find that amazing, and I've always said, you know, I think I could be a vegetarian, not vegan, but just a vegetarian, but I have just not quite figured out how to make the macros work, or at least for how I'm accustomed to eating, so I definitely want to hear more about that. But, you know, I was reading a fascinating article about you, and so Julia was featured in a publication. It's called Great Vegan Athletes, and they were featuring Julia and all of her adventures that she has been into. So as she said, she's, you know, competed internationally in bobsled, bodybuilding, fitness and sprinting. And then you're also a vegan, which seems kind of, I don't know if it's contrary is the word I'm looking for, but it's the word I'm going to use when it comes to bodybuilding, because, you know, we're always talking about protein consumption to build muscle, which usually we think of, okay, meat, whey protein, eggs, you know, a little bit of cheese, what have you. But, you know, we don't always equate with being able to accomplish those kind of gains with being a vegan. So before we kind of get on that track, though, I mean, you've had a lot of success competing, but you've also had a couple of speed bumps in the road, if you will. And just to kind of talk a little bit about that, because I know you had a heart condition, and then also you had a pretty nasty crash that kind of left you a little beaten up and broken as well. So just kind of walk us through that track.
Okay. Well, when I joined the British bobsleigh team, my goal was to get to the Vancouver Olympics. I qualified for the team, went on tour for 4 years, basically on the European Cup, on the World Cup, the America's Cup, qualified my driver because I was one of the ones that runs and jumps in at the back. I was a brakeman. We qualified our driver for the Olympics. But unfortunately, I was involved in a crash on race day in my bobsled. And unfortunately, the way the sled crashed, it landed on top of me and actually crushed six vertebrae in my back. Yeah. I'm incredibly lucky because a similar accident happened to another athlete a couple of years later, and she had a lot more difficult road to recovery than I had. But my bone density is so high off the scale because of my diet and the amount of exercise I've always done, that my back was so strong that even crushing the vertebrae, it didn't crush my spinal cord. So apart from some pins and needles in one arm, that's the only symptom I've been left with. So the British Olympic Medical Institute put me through rehab, basically taught me to lift from scratch again, and put me back together and got me back out in the bobsled. And I did actually manage to do another year of competing after that accident. But unfortunately, while I was having the rehab for the broken back, they actually discovered I'd got a heart condition, which is an irregular heartbeat. It's brought on by adrenaline, stress. And obviously, I was doing an incredibly adrenaline-fueled sport, trying to qualify for the Olympics. And this condition, they think, had been lying dormant since I was born. So it was something I was born with. But they believe that the stress on my body from the crash and breaking my back actually triggered this condition to become symptomatic. So then I had a couple of years where they were messing around with medication. They were looking at doing an operation. And I was very ill for a couple of years. And basically that's what forced me to retire from bobsled, because the medication they put me on, just I had muscle wastage, my strength completely went, and every time they tested me, I was getting worse. So in the end, I just had to retire because I just couldn't be competitive even as much as I wanted to. Then I became even more ill. This went on for quite a long time. And then suddenly, out of the blue, as quick as these symptoms started, they disappeared. And I went back to my consultant, and he basically said that the condition is still there, but the exact situation that made the symptoms start are not there for whatever reason. But he said they could come back at any day. So basically the way he told me to look at things is to take each day as it comes, forget about it. If it comes back, I go back to the hospital, have all the tests, and they deal with it if it happens again. And that would probably be an ablation to radiate out the faulty part of my heart. So basically, once these symptoms started to decline and I started to feel better, I rejoined the gym. I'd relocated and joined this new gym, which was a real old school bodybuilding gym. And the owner was really every day, come on, you need to compete, you need to get on stage. And at this point, having been in performance sport, the idea of getting on stage and being judged for how I looked was so alien. I wasn't very enthusiastic about it, but I have to say, I have to thank him for pushing me to try it, because the minute I did my first competition, I was looking online for when I could get back on stage again, and I just wanted to improve and do another one, and I was just totally hooked. And for me, because I was still having some mild symptoms at that point, I couldn't really do anything performance related, but I could still train. And even though I get nervous getting on stage, it doesn't seem enough to trigger my symptoms. So it's a sport that I can compete in, and it doesn't seem to affect me. And then after a year of getting into the bodybuilding, I tried my athletics training again and then started to compete back on the athletics track. And again, very occasionally I'll get mild symptoms, but I seem to be able to control it. And the first year back on the track, I became world champion for my age group for 200 metres. So, yeah, and it's just crazy because even a year before, I was even struggling to even do a session in the gym. So just a crazy turnaround. And really, I was so unhappy and so depressed when I had to stop doing the bobsleigh, because that had consumed my life for 4 years and my goals were so strong for that, that when that was just taken away from me kind of without notice and I wasn't ready to finish competing in that sport, I still feel like I hadn't reached my potential, that bodybuilding really just gave me this new focus to channel all my energy into and make me feel like an athlete again. And it really helped me come through what was really quite a difficult period of my life. Yeah. So I have a lot to thank bodybuilding for. And, you know, people, I compete a lot. I added up how many competitions I've done in the 7 years, and it's over 60 now. And and people ask, people ask me, why do you compete so often? Why do you travel all over the world just doing all these competitions? And the reason is because, I don't know, tomorrow I could get ill again and I might not be able to do this again, or I might not be able to do it for a long time. So for me, I like to seize these opportunities as they come along and make the most of competing, just in case there becomes a time when I can't do it anymore.
Well, you know, let's backtrack a little bit, because you touched on something I wanted to ask you. And that's about, you know, the downturn where everything seemed like it was falling in on you, and all the dreams that you had are suddenly becoming nightmares because, you know, they become out of reach. I need to walk the listeners through, because we've got about six questions asking about how you got through that time and moment. You know, who was there to support you? Who was there on your side? Basically, you know, make sure you don't fall off the edge. And where do you find the mental fortitude to find a way to keep going, even when everything seems to be turning against you?
That's a really, really good question. I'm very lucky to have a husband who has also competed at a high level in his own sport. So he understands my lifestyle, the goals that I have. So when this was all taken away from me, he could really understand and empathize with me about the fact that I'd had to quit what I defined myself as without warning and without feeling like I'd really achieved everything I wanted to achieve. And I wasn't ready to quit. And a couple of things happened, really. The British bobsleigh team actually asked me to come back and coach a youth team for a year for the Youth Olympics.
Wow.
So it allowed me to stay involved in the sport. And they wanted me involved because I'd seen the highs and the lows of the sport. So they knew that I would be able to empathise with the difficult days the athlete might have when they've been down the track several times, landed on their head several times, and they're cold and they're tired and they're hurting because it's not a comfortable sport. You do get a lot of bumps and bruises. And it's quite scary. And they knew that because of the journey I'd had, that I would be a good person to have involved with these youth athletes that they'd never brought through the sport before. So being able to stay involved in the sport for another year or two after I was forced to retire was great, because I could use my experience to help other athletes. So that, and my husband just being so supportive, were two things that really helped me get through. But I'm very much a goal-driven person. So this is where the bodybuilding came in, because I went from having this goal to get to the Vancouver Olympics. And then when that was taken away, I mean, I don't know if I would have qualified. I would have had to have raced off with another couple of athletes, and I may not have made it, but I'll never know because I wasn't quite able to make it to that point. And not being able to try was just gut-wrenching. So finding another sport where I could just work at my own rate, train at a level that was okay for me at the time, and just have these little goals to work on improving my body, and having all these new skills to learn, like learning all the poses and the stage presence, learning all more about diet as well. All these things combined together really helped me get through that really difficult time.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, you know, we all have issues in our life that, you know, we need help getting through, and it's always helpful, and I even think motivating to hear, excuse me, how other people have faced issues and overcome. And we still have quite a few listener questions rolling in. So Debbie, she touched on whether or not she actually got the chance to compete in the Olympics. So I hope that answered your questions for you there. Billy, yes, this is the young lady that we interviewed in the Midwest Muscle video from the East Coast, the NGA East Coast Natural. So she is one and the same, and now you are hearing more of her story. When you were talking about your recovery and just making it back through that process, and I know some of our listeners are trying to figure out, so we're hearing, you know, how it was working for you kind of on the personal side of the equation, but we're assuming that you also have a full-time job at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And Troy wanted to know if while you were recovering, if you had any occurrences at work that may have slowed down your progress at all.
Throughout the time I've been competing in the bodybuilding, do you mean?
Yes.
When I was doing the bobsled, I was very fortunate. I worked for the local council, and in your contract, if you work for the local authority, for the government, if you represent your country, you're actually allowed time off work to compete. So when I was actually competing for Great Britain, I had a full-time job for the local council, but they allowed me the time off to go and compete. So I was very fortunate that during the competition season, I could be a full-time athlete. But as soon as the season finished, I would go straight back to work. Now, I actually relocated and left that job around the time that this was all happening with my heart condition and breaking my back. And when we relocated, I was actually, I did a number of different jobs, which I kind of juggled for a time until we got ourselves settled. And then we ended up opening our own gym. So I juggled several jobs while we were getting all that organized. I then went and worked for another gym as a manager. So I was working in the gym environment. And then we were lucky enough to actually open our own gym and designed our perfect little old school natural gym. And we had a couple of great years with this gym. But we had to actually relocate to Spain for family reasons. So we actually had to sell our gym a couple of years after we'd opened it, which we were really sad about because we put our heart and soul into this gym. So now I work purely online as an online fitness trainer. So I train women to do all different sorts of activities, like some of them compete on the stage, some do fitness competitions, marathons. I've coached people to do their fitness test to join the military, all kinds of different things. So I train women, and my main goal is to find a healthy way for them to achieve their goals, to improve their body image, to have a healthy diet and lifestyle, but achieve their goals at the same time. So throughout the time I've competed in all these different sports, I guess I've had quite different working environments, from working full-time to being self-employed, running a facility, and then actually working from home like I do now. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yes.
I think so. I definitely think so. In fact, it dovetails perfectly into our next question because Jenny wants to know if you are a coach, which you are, and what is your contact information if someone would like to get a hold of you?
Okay. I am a coach, and basically I've just launched my new website, which is just www.juliahubbard.co.uk, and I have all my contact details, all my social media is all attached to that.
Okay, awesome. So it was juliahubbard.co.uk?
That's right, yeah.
All right, perfect, perfect. Awesome. All right, so... Jenny, I hope that helps you out. And anyone else who's interested in connecting with Julia, go visit her website, check it out, send her a message. Julia, Benny wants to congratulate you on your mental strength and endurance, and he is shocked to learn all that you have been through and the strides that you have made following that. So that's a congrats from Benny. Sarah wants to know how tall you are and how hard is it to keep your diet in form when you compete in so many shows so often?
Okay. I'm 5'8", and I weigh at the moment, just so you can get a picture, about 137 pounds. Now, off-season, I only go maybe half a stone up from that. So the reason why I'm able to compete in lots of shows is because when I go off season, I do it very gradually. I reverse my diet and I don't go too far off. I just put enough fat on so that I'm healthy in the off season and I'm eating enough so that I can gain lean tissue in my training. But I don't go into like a full kind of bulking phase because I don't personally believe that pushing your body through these extremes of yo-yo dieting is healthy long term and it's not very sustainable. But also because often in the off season I'm competing on the track, so I need to be in shape because I don't want to be carrying excess weight that's not useful weight around an athletics track because it just makes your racing harder. So the way I'm able to compete in lots of shows is by just being basically living an athlete lifestyle all year round. Now, that doesn't mean I eat like a saint all year because I do like my food, I like my treats as much as anybody else, but I'm just a little bit conscious of it all year round. And then when I'm coming up to competition season, I take my diet very gradually, so I allow myself a lot of time. My body responds to exercise more than diet, so I'm kind of fortunate in that respect because I love training. So I will push my training up before I really drop my little calories. And that really allows me to just gradually bring myself into competition shape. And what I do is my first couple of competitions, I might not have hit peak conditioning yet, which is a risk, and not everyone would be comfortable doing that. But if it's a qualifier for a competition later, then I might take that risk. And then I sort of gradually bring myself in so that by the end of the season, I'm kind of hitting my peak. And I feel like now I've got 4 competitions left this year, and my aim is to bring my absolute 100% best to those last competitions.
Awesome. Awesome. So you've already got 4. So I know you've competed at least, I'm trying to think back to our interview. You did the East Coast Natural. You were getting ready to compete right after that, I believe, in Connecticut. And I don't remember if you had had any competitions before then. I'm leaning towards you did.
Yeah, I've had quite a long season already. Earlier in the year, I went to Thailand to compete with an Australian federation at their natural universe. So that was kind of June, I think. And then in August, I came out to California and did the UMBA universe. I won their amateur and won my pro card with them last year. So I wanted to come back and do their pro show this year, which I did. And then I've come out and done, I did the 2 competitions last week. I did another one this weekend. And then I go back to the UK and then come back out and do another few competitions to finish my season off. So it has been quite a long year already.
Oh my goodness, I would say so. So how did you do last weekend?
Last weekend I did the, yeah, the Connecticut show was the IPL. And that's a very, I don't know if you've come across the IPL, the International Physique
yeah.
League. They're very much a kind of a fitness orientated rather than old school kind of bodybuilding. And
mm-hmm.
I did three divisions. I did the pro figure, pro athletic and the evening gown division. I won the evening gown and came second in the figure and athletic class. And then I went, had a quick flight down to Florida and did the AMBS pro show just this weekend. And I won their figure show. So, yeah, it was my pro debut with them. So that was exciting. It was the Unaltered Sunshine State.
Wow, congratulations. So you're just kind of tearing it up, but I think that's kind of your style. You seem to excel in pretty much everything that you do. So I am not surprised. So congratulations. And Jake is chiming in and he says, and with your height, you have to do well in the model and gown classes as well. And obviously that probably doesn't hurt to be 5'8". So there you go. All right. So Terry, so we alluded to your vegan diet earlier. So you started out vegetarian,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to steal all the thunder because I would like you to tell the story. So Terry, you were wondering about the article that I had referenced earlier in the show. I've gone ahead and posted that on the Midwest Muscle Facebook page. So for any of our listeners who are also curious about Julia's write-up in the Vegan Athlete, go ahead to Midwest Muscle and that link is there. And we have touched on several of the things that are in that article, so you haven't missed a whole lot, but go ahead and check it out. And then, and Terry, like a lot of our listeners, want to hear more about your backstory on becoming a vegan. So why don't you go ahead and walk us through that part of your adventure?
Okay. I've probably had the slowest transition from vegetarian to vegan that probably anybody's done. But basically, when I was 15, the school I went to was very pro the environment. We did a lot of environmental projects locally and within the school grounds. And we were invited to a national convention about environmental issues to talk about some of these projects we've done. And when we were at this convention, that was when I was really first exposed to how food is produced and factory farming and animal agriculture. And this was when I was 15, and I was really quite shocked by what I was learning. I didn't really like how the farming was done. And that was the real trigger for me to doing more research and deciding I wanted to go vegetarian. So my initial reasons for giving up meat were sort of animal welfare kind of issues and also environmental issues. And then over the years, the more I read up, because obviously I'm quite competitive by nature, I'm an athlete, I didn't want my diet to inhibit my goals. So I did a lot of research, a lot of reading about how to make vegetarian diets work for an athlete. And the more I read, the more healthy I believed the vegetarian diet was. And because we traveled a lot, especially when I was doing bobsleigh, we'd be away from home for 4 months of the year, living out of hotels, not much control over the food you're eating. So although I was interested in eating vegan, it wasn't really possible, or I didn't feel it was possible at the time, because it would have been very difficult to eat in any kind of healthy way or get enough protein while I was living out of hotels and traveling and on the road for a lot of the year. So I didn't really look at that side of things until a lot later. And then about 3 years ago, I started having problems with my digestive system, with IBS. Doctors couldn't really pinpoint what was going on. So I had some food intolerance tests done. And when I got the results back from that, there was quite a few different things on my intolerance list, but the two main ones were eggs and dairy. So if anyone's had food intolerance tests done before, they'll know that once you get those results, the first thing you have to do is take all those foods out of your diet for about a month, and then you try reintroducing them and see what effect it has. And if you reintroduce it and you don't have any problems, then you aren't actually intolerant to that food. But obviously, some of the foods you're likely to have a reaction to. So I took all these foods out of my diet, immediately felt so much better. And then after the month, decided to try and start putting these back in. And the first thing I tried was eggs, because I'd really missed them, because as a vegetarian, that was one of my main sources of protein. I was ill for 2 days. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I don't want to overshare, but basically I really did not do well. I thought I was gluten intolerant, but really what was happening is every time I had eggs, I was having probably bread with it. Or I thought I might, or I'd be having butter or something on toast. And I would think it was the bread that was the problem, but actually it was the dairy. So after a couple of days of trying the eggs and realizing that was just making me ill, I tried putting the dairy back in. And the first thing I had was a whey protein shake, which, again, anyone who does bodybuilding relies on it for convenience. I couldn't concentrate on anything. My stomach was bad. And I realized within about 15, 20 minutes of drinking this shake that it was not affecting me very well. So really, my journey from being vegetarian to vegan was purely health reasons, because both of them were making me quite ill. But I think this intolerance had built up so gradually, I hadn't really realized what was making me feel bad. And that what the doctors were trying to do was really just cover up the symptoms with medications, but they weren't actually looking at what was causing me to not feel very well. So after about a year of all these stomach problems and like foggy headedness and just not feeling quite right, I basically found the issue was the foods. And there was a couple of other foods on the list that were also a problem, but basically that they were the last two things that weren't vegan that I was still eating. So at that point, when I gave those up, that's when I changed to vegan. And you know, after years of thinking it would be too hard to do, I just wish I'd switched earlier, because I find it's easier to stay leaner all year round on a vegan diet than it was before. I think I eat more than I did before. The diet just suits me better, and I feel so much better because I'm not having these constant issues with stomach ache and things like that. My reasons for being vegan were purely health reasons, but initially it was all about the animal welfare and farming issues. So I've been vegetarian for 23 years and then vegan just coming up to 3 years.
Okay, gotcha. Well, and so I'm going to take a step back here and just throw a few things out, because I'm going to kind of set the stage for the next questions that have come in. So, guys, so Julia is a qualified vegan nutritionist. She has a degree in physiology and sports science, a nutrition diploma, and several personal training qualifications. So that's just a little bit of her background, and I wanted to throw that out there because the next couple of questions we have – I know that your background is going to help you, help give some scope to your perspective that I'm sure that you're going to share. So, Terry, sorry, I had to get back to my place here. So she's really interested in your vegan story because her son is vegan and she wants to help him with his diet, but she also wants to make sure that she is not doing anything that is going to impact his growth, because she's not sure some of his food choices are the right ones for a growing boy. Being a vegan nutritionist, I mean, is there any concern, developmental concerns with being vegan?
I don't think so. But there's one main reason why people don't do well on a vegan diet is basically because they don't have enough variety in their diet, or they become kind of a junk food vegan, where they're totally using, well, for example, French fries are vegan. It's a potato, but that's not a healthy food. And a lot of people just assume that anything that's vegan is healthy. If you think about protein, every protein originally comes from a plant. So if you eat meat, basically you're eating an animal that ate a plant to build their muscle. So basically, as a vegan, you're just eating the protein firsthand in a less concentrated form than from the meat. So you're not really missing out on anything. You're just getting it from its original source, that's all. But what I would say is, if you only have quite limited food choices, that's where you can have a problem with the protein, because your body needs the full spectrum of amino acids. And a lot of vegan proteins aren't full spectrum amino acids. So variety is really important. Now, you don't have to have every amino acid within one meal, because your body will just absorb what it needs at the time. It stores some of it, which it can tap into later. So some vegans will do sort of food combining where, for example, rice and beans is a perfect protein, because between the rice and the beans, you get every amino acid. But you don't have to combine foods in that way, because your body is capable of extracting what it needs at any time, as long as throughout the course of the whole day you've consumed everything it needs. So as long as you're eating lots of whole foods, lots of different fruits, vegetables, beans, lentils, and some meat substitutes, maybe a protein shake, you really can get everything you need. There's a few things that vegans are more likely to be deficient in, things like B12, iron, just because, for example, spinach might not be so concentrated, so you would have to eat much more of it than you would a piece of beef to get the same amount. So sometimes vegans will supplement on those, but you can go to the doctor and get a blood test just to check, rather than just take a supplement for the sake of it. So I think children can do absolutely fine developmental on a vegan diet, just as long as you're getting lots of variety of food there. Supplement-wise, the one supplement I personally use that I've always had amazing results from is creatine, because the main source of that in most people's diet is beef. So if you're not eating red meat, you're likely to be a little bit low on creatine, which isn't a problem for someone unless they're an athlete. So vegans and vegetarians will always see much more dramatic results from taking a supplement of creatine than someone who already eats a lot of red meat. Now, I'm not suggesting like a child should be taking that, but it just seemed something that seems sensible to talk about while we're talking about sort of deficiencies and the diet.
Gotcha. All right. So, Terry, a lot of good stuff there. Hopefully that helps answer your questions, but I encourage you, as I encourage all of our listeners, continue to do your homework, do your research, and just keep coming to conclusions that work well for you based on the information that you're taking in. But that's also a good lead in to our next question, because we've had about five guys who are having a hard time understanding how you can maintain the muscle that you have on the competitive schedule that you have on a vegan diet. And I think you kind of touched on that, but if you have any other information you want to share to help expand on that, we would love to hear it.
Okay. I think the main reason why I'm able to maintain the muscle is because I've had this muscle a long time. And if you've only been training a short period of time and you've gained new muscle, that muscle isn't really embedded. So it's more likely to go if you diet hard than if you've had muscle for several years and it's well grained in your body. So because I've always been an athlete, and although I've gained muscle over the last few years since I've been doing the bodybuilding, the main reason why I think I'm able to maintain it over a long competitive season is because, partly because, like I said, I focus my diet really, my weight loss or my fat loss comes from the training predominantly. Because, and I've actually had genetic tests done for this to find out how my body responds to different things. And one of the things that came back from these genetic tests was that I'm a high exercise responder, but I'm not a high diet responder. So I don't drop my calories really dramatically. I just focus on the training. I don't do loads of cardio. If I'm training twice a day, it's likely to be weights or circuits or sprinting, but I don't do a lot of dedicated cardio. Because for me, with my body type being so tall and kind of naturally quite skinny, if I was to do cardio, my muscle would just disappear. So it's really finding the right training to suit my body type and not dieting hard. I start, my diet will start kind of 20-odd weeks out from a show, and I do it very gradually. So by the time I come to the show, I'm still eating a good amount of food. I keep my protein level quite high. And because I'm doing it so gradually, my body seems to be able to keep hold of, so I don't really lose too much muscle over the course of the season. And like I say, I keep my diet pretty clean all year round. So when as soon as I finish my competitive season, I'm straight back in the gym working on improvements for the following year. So yeah, it's partly how I manage my diet, not dieting drastically. I never panic and try and come into a show crash dieting too hard because I'm not quite ready yet. I just try and keep in my head that I need to not panic and diet too hard. And also then finding the training that works for me, which is predominantly the weight training and circuits and doing minimal cardio and just adding in HIIT training as and when I need it. Or I'll do very low intensity, just walking because I like to go out walking outside. So by avoiding like the heavy cardio and just doing the training that suits my body, I seem to be able to maintain throughout the course of the competitive season. Does that answer the question?
Well, there you go. So Dick, Bill, Ted, Dale, Carl, anyone else who is wondering the same thing? I hope that answers your question, but if not, let us know. We'll try to take another stab at it. So, Julia, Lynn wants to know, how many people have tried to change your routine and diet when they saw you beginning to become successful, such as other gym coaches? Did they, you know, take a look at you and say, oh, we can take your process and make it better? Or who handles your training? Do you train yourself? Does your husband train you? I guess we've not really talked about that.
No, well, basically, when I was doing bobsled, pretty much every mealtime it would come up in conversation, because obviously I was eating differently to the rest of the team, and everybody's opinion would be that if I ate meat, I'd be a better athlete. So I did kind of find myself defending myself quite a lot, but actually the coaches were quite happy with what I was doing. They were quite happy to organise food for me to suit my diet wherever we went. So the coaches weren't bothered, but it obviously was quite a conversation starter at pretty much every meal. But since I've been doing the bodybuilding, I've only had one coach, and that was for my very first competition. And it was the guy who ran the gym that was pushing me to do the competition that first time. And he basically introduced me to how to prep for competition. Now, he never actually tried to get me to eat meat. However, he wasn't a natural bodybuilder, and the reason why I stopped training with him after about 3 months was because it was quite obvious that he wanted me to go to the other side of bodybuilding, and I just was not interested in that. And to be honest, although I have a lot to thank him for because he got me into the sport, he also taught me that I wanted to be in control of how I prepped for my shows. So I went and did my research, which 7 years ago, there wasn't a lot there about natural bodybuilding online to research, definitely not much about vegan bodybuilders. So I really just experimented, tried different ways of competing. I've probably never done the same prep twice because I'm always sort of looking at different ways to do things, how to improve things. So basically from that very first 3 months, I've been totally in control of my own prep. And I've never really discussed my prep with other coaches. Possibly, well, definitely since I've been in Spain, because obviously there's a slight language barrier because my Spanish isn't amazing. But even when I was still based in the UK, because I was training in my own gym, I didn't really have other coaches around that would question or ask me why I was doing things a certain way. So I suppose my own coaching has been quite private, really. And so no one's really ever questioned it or told me I should be doing it a different way. So I'm totally in shock. My husband comes to every training session with me. We train together. Sometimes we'll do sessions together, but quite often we're just getting on with our own thing, and we just spot each other. But yeah, he's really supportive with if I need to train twice a day, he comes to the gym twice a day. He's not always particularly happy about it. He's pulling a face now because we have to go and train after we finish this tonight. But he's very understanding with the diet. He's not completely vegan, but he eats the vegan food that I cook at home. I'm very lucky that he's so understanding with me getting ready for competitions. But obviously he loves the travel because he loves coming over here. He actually designs my whole competitive season. And it's usually to incorporate a few places we've never been to before so we can travel around. So it's like having my own manager just to organize everything, and I just turn up and compete.
Beautiful.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. So now I've not really had anyone question how I do things or try and persuade me to do it another way. I actually don't think I'm very good at being coached because I have too many of my own thoughts and opinions and things I want to try. So I think if I tried to, I like having control over it, and I think I would find it very difficult handing it over to someone else to organise, because I wouldn't like not being in charge of it. And also coaching myself, I only have myself to blame if it goes wrong. But I do understand why people do have coaches. I mean, I coach other people, and I know a lot of coaches who also have coaches. And I totally get the need to have accountability, because it's very easy for me to look at my diet or my training or to step on the scales and say, yeah, I think you can have a treat today, or no, we don't need to go stricter yet. If I just fancy that little treat, I'm only accountable to myself. So, you know, sometimes I've been quite harsh on myself, but I guess there is that possibility I could be too lenient on myself as well. So sometimes I think it would be nice to hand everything over to someone else, and so they just send me the programs and I just get on and do it. And having that accountability, I totally understand. But I actually think I would just be uncoachable because of being vegan, being natural, combining it with my athletics training, because not all coaches would get that I need to do my sprint training as well. And, you know, I might be racing one weekend and on the stage the next weekend. So, yeah, I'm not even sure I'm coachable.
Yeah, I kind of have that same thought about myself sometimes.
Oh, really?
My nutrition coach would probably agree. Well, I mean, and that's good. I mean, I think that's good to know enough about yourself to know, you know, how you feel you work best. And, you know, and you totally keep yourself accountable. So you're right. If something doesn't go right, you know, the only person you can point to is yourself. Yep,
exactly.
And you're okay with that. And that is good.
Yeah.
And that is good. So, and I know, Kaylin, I'm pretty sure you need to jump in here at some point. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking. What do you got?
What I'm loving is the support that she has. And it's, you know, for Des and I, it's a joy to hear that, because we've unfortunately seen some people, you know, really struggle backstage and really suffer because they either had a not so much coach, or basically person that wasn't qualified to be in the coaching arena, I guess the best way to say it. So, you know, it's good to hear that. And I would love to have you speak a little more about it so we can understand, you know, just how important and vital that is, because there's a lot of people that start off with the greatest potential. but they can't basically manage because that juggling act that they have to do isn't sustainable. So, you know, touch on that just a little bit, and I'll pass it back to Des because I know she has some more questions.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple of things about support. One of them is obviously family, friends, partners, and the other side of it is obviously the coach. The way I look at it is competing is really my hobby. It's something I do because I love doing it. It's purely for me, for my own personal goals. And I think what can happen is people kind of lose track on that. And the prep becomes more important than everything else going on in their life. And it's very easy to then neglect your family, friends, partners. And I've seen a lot of couples breaking up because of their prep, or their friends just become disassociated, or they have problems with their family because either they don't understand why they're competing, because obviously everyone has very personal reasons for why they go into competing. And I think it's really important to maintain some form of social life and normal life while you're doing your prep so it doesn't become so absorbed. And also that helps you cope afterwards because a lot of competitors get that post-competition blues afterwards because the competition finishes and there's this massive anticlimax. It's all over. What do I do now? Your friends have all moved on because you haven't spoken to them for months. You've probably fallen out with your partner and so they've gone. So I think it's really important to have some perspective when you're prepping for a show, to make time for your family and friends. You can still go out. You can go to the cinema. There's lots of temptation around you. But I've been known to take my own snacks in my bag, go out. I'll still go out for dinner. I'll just call a restaurant in advance and check for something I can have on the menu, or I make my own salad up off side dishes and things. But I won't just not go out because I'm prepping. I'll find a way to do it. I'll fit it in around my treat meals and things like that. So I think it's really important. If you want support from the people around you, you need to not push them to the side while you're prepping. So that's the one side of support I think is really important to keep in mind. Then there's the coaching side. Now, I think that there's a massive problem at the moment, and this industry has just grown so rapidly since Bikini and Physique came in. And I think it's the most amazing thing because it's bringing more and more people into the gym to work out for whatever reason that they probably wouldn't have done before. And especially for women, we didn't really have much in the way of goals. So most women would just go to the gym, do an hour's cardio and go home and not really stick to it because there's nothing to keep them doing it. So the growth of the sport has the potential to be massively positive. But unfortunately, it also seems to be leading to a lot of problems. And the problems that I'm seeing is growing so rapidly. The number of people coming in and claiming to be prep coaches has also gone up rapidly.
Yes.
So my biggest advice to anybody thinking about competing is do your research. Don't just go to a coach because you've seen them online or they're at your local gym or your friend's been prepped by them. Do your research. Find out about other people they've coached. Talk to them. Find out how they coped after the show. Because what I'm seeing as a coach is I'm getting a lot of people coming to me who've had a prep with another coach who's basically starved them into shape. Sometimes girls developing eating disorder because of the prep that they were on, disordered body image, real serious issues because of prepping for a show, which I think is completely avoidable. It should be and can be a very healthy process. But a lot of girls, and I'm talking from the women's perspective because that's what I see every day. See, coming into competing, wanting to do it for a healthy reason and have a goal to aim for, but it's actually leading them down a path that's really not good for them. And then they're given no advice post-competition. They're having these massive rebounds, their body then changes, their mindsets are not in the right place. And then I tend to get a lot of these girls coming to me to help get them back on track after this awful sort of experience that they've had. So I think it's really important if you're looking to compete to really do your research, ask lots of questions, speak to other athletes that they've coached, before you make a decision, because if you're going to part with your money and hand over your health and your body to someone, you need to make sure they're qualified and experienced enough to do the job.
I know. Amen to that, sister. And we could have a whole show on that by itself.
Oh,
and y'all, I know
and
your
I can...
questions are rolling in.
It's something I'm very passionate about. Because, yeah.
You might have to have Julia
hours.
Back. We might have to have
I'm quite
Julia
happy
back.
To come back.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's
so
a whole
keep that
subject.
In mind. So
yeah.
We have two questions for sure that I want to try and get to, but we may only get to one, so apologies, but we will definitely still get answers and try and share those at the beginning of our next show. So quickly, China wants to know, what is more difficult, a bodybuilding diet or an Olympic training diet?
I have to say the bodybuilding diet, because when I was bobsledding, it's a weighted sport, so you want to be heavy. So I was always being told I was too light. And if you're too light, you have to put the weight in the sled because it has to weigh a certain amount when it goes down the hill. So you don't want the weight in the sled. You want the weight on your body pushing the sled so it goes faster. So I was constantly being told to eat more. So I would have this healthy diet, and then in between, I'd be having peanut butter on toast between every meal, lots of extra snacks. And I went straight from that to like a year later being told to eat less. And then, so I definitely think the bodybuilding diet is more difficult. Because
yeah,
you have to
be
more careful about your nutrition.
Too.
Yeah. Well, when you're eating a lot of food, it's very easy to get all the right nutrition. When you're not eating as much, you've got to be much more careful that what you're putting in your mouth is good for you and not just wasted calories. So you do have to be a lot more thorough in making sure you get everything you need.
I know it. So much good stuff. Okay, last question. Tina wants to know if the coach who was pushing you to take steroids in the beginning, did he do it gradually by just referencing it here and there, or did he just flat out tell you, this is what I think you to do? Because Peter has a son that has him questioning if his coach might be trying to push him in that direction.
Okay, yeah. From my personal experience, the coach was quite direct with it. He basically, and this was the point that I walked away, you will never be successful unless you take drugs. That was what he said to me. And I was given a list of stuff I should take, which I went home and looked up on Google and realized this horrible path that he thought I needed to take to be successful. He didn't understand there was a natural sport out there. And to be honest, the first competition I did, the first 2 years I competed was with the International Federation for the IFBB, NABBA. They're not tested feds. I didn't even realize there was two sides to the sport. So he was quite direct in telling me that I would not be successful if I didn't use. But I've had other girls come to me who they've told me that someone in the gym has suggested they take a fat burner, which wasn't actually a fat burner. Someone actually sent me a picture of something once and said, my coach has told me to take this. What do you think? And I said, well, it's a steroid, so I would really steer clear of that. And she said, oh, he told me it was just a fat burner. So some of them are not being very truthful about what they're suggesting people take, or they make it sound so innocent because everybody else does it. You're letting the team down if you don't do it because everyone else is doing it, and you let the gym down if you don't do well because you didn't do it. And it's almost like grooming, where these like subtle little digs that you're not doing everything it takes to be successful. So you're letting the side down, you're letting the gym down. And so it can be very subtle, and it can be very untruthful, or very skating around the facts, saying that, or sometimes because it's not an actual steroid, that it's still natural. I've heard that a lot as well with certain drugs. People saying, oh, well, I'm still natural because I haven't taken steroids. And I'm like, well, no, because that's still an illegal drug, even though it's not actually a steroid. So there's a lot of confusion out there and a lot of subtle grooming going on behind the scenes and making people feel bad for not. And then they just do it because they're told they have to do it. And if they're in a gym where that's the norm, then sometimes people don't even really realize how bad it is, and they don't do the research, and they don't realize the health problems and the permanent health problems that that can come from doing it. So yeah, if he's already getting the feeling that there's some kind of coaxing going on, then yeah, that's not good. Because it will just lead more and more to them trying to push them to do it.
Yep. So
yeah, it's a horrible area.
That it is. And I would just say, you know what, keep asking questions and keep a close eye on your son. And, you know, if you can insert yourself into that relationship, great. And if you can't because your son is grown, then, you know, just be there to try to give as much guidance as you can. And with that, I hate it, but we have to say goodbye. So, Julia, we just have to have you back. That's all there is to it.
I would love to come back.
Nice.
Awesome. So, guys, we will be working on that and definitely to get her back. And so with that, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. I have loved this show. I love your accent. I've loved your perspective you've shared with us. So thank you, Kaylin.
Hey, I love the accent,
too,
and so do the listeners. They're in love.
Thank you so much for letting me come. Thank you so much for allowing me to come and share like the different aspects of my story as well, because there's some quite important issues that have come up that I think are important to talk about.
Definitely, definitely. So have a fantastic workout this evening, and we will
be in
touch with you soon. I know we need to do shout outs, but we'll have to do shout outs on the next show. So on behalf of Julia, Kaylin, myself, and the boys from P4P Muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
With snickerdoodle.